All right, this is Russell Canning with NHExit.org, making our fifth or sixth one. I don't even remember what number it is. But this time we have something different. I have Daniel Richard on the phone. He's in New Hampshire. And I wanted to ask him about a couple of events that he had and what they were trying to do. Hello there.
Hello, thank you for the invitation.
So, when was the last event you guys had? Was that 2 Mondays ago or 1 Monday ago at the State House?
Yeah, the big event you're referring to was on the 21st, on Monday the 21st at 10 a.m. A group of state citizens assembled at the State House. They had assembled the previous Saturday to consider whether it was time to sever their relationship with the state of New Hampshire. And when I say the state, I'm referring to the statutory state, not the constitutional state.
Okay.
And they've all come to the knowledge of what that is. And so after deciding that, yes, there is no longer an effective functioning government, there's no longer any available redress of grievance, and therefore, should we exercise our right under the New Hampshire Bill of Rights, Article 10, which grants us the right of revolution?
Yes. What do you think is the main reasons for that? That we don't have
Well,
an effective one.
the major problem fundamentally, and this goes across all of America, is knowledge, education. New Hampshire's Constitution, the very first job assignment given by the founders of New Hampshire in 1784, the first day that their Constitution went into effect, it was June 2nd, 1784, was education, to preserve the common law, which was that there were Part One, the Bill of Rights, which incorporated 38 enumerated rights, didn't incorporate all of them, it just enumerated those specific rights. And then Part Two, a form of government to protect Part One. It's a beautiful social compact. Unfortunately, our government no longer lives under it, it no longer operates under it, it simply uses it as a guide.
Yeah, what do you think's the what brought you to this point in December?
Well, I had previously been very active in my study of our government, both state and federal, in our history, our early history, and I had come to the understanding that voting fraud's been going on in this state since the 1960s, and it began by the voters being deceived by bad faith actors within state government. And what they would do is that they would deceive the voters by proposing amendments to our state constitution and then not really disclose what the outcome would be. So the voters would be deceived in the change the constitution, and this was critical. They changed the makeup of the state, which created what I alluded to earlier, which was the statutory state, and they also changed the makeup of the courts.
Well,
So those are the damage.
I had one tiny brush with the typical voting stuff in New Hampshire. You remember the year that Kerry went up against W?
Yes.
What year would that would be? And I asked the guy in charge of the polling place in Keene, the next time around. I said, "Well, were there any shenanigans last time around? Because there was all these rumors of people being bussed up from Massachusetts to vote for Kerry since they didn't need the votes down there and stuff like that." And he said,
Right.
"Well, all I know is that we had more votes than registered people in our county." So,
Right, right.
and I said, "So what was done about it?" And he's nothing. And I'm looking around the room, and the nice little old white-haired ladies that are running the place, they have no idea this is happening. And this guy that knew what was happening knew nothing happened.
Right, right. Well, yeah, it's outrageous. And the problem is that what they've done is, when I allude to voter fraud, the next phase of voting fraud was actually dismantling the constitutional provisions that was in place. In other words, the people who wrote the state constitution, the founders of New Hampshire, wrote a specific protocol by which their delegates would be elected. They made no provisions to grant the legislature to make its own rules as to how it elects itself. It's
Oh
absurd.
yeah.
And that's exactly what happened in 1973. They removed the descriptive language that you had to be a state citizen of this state in order to be endowed with political rights. In other words, someone who's endowed with the right to elect or be elected to office. And that word is inhabitant. And so only state citizens could be qualified voters. And then the next thing they did is they granted resident aliens. Who are resident aliens? Resident aliens are U.S. citizens who move here, who are not New Hampshire citizens. And they granted the means for these out-of-staters the right to vote, and they can't. And to make that one step further is the second element. This is established very firmly in, of all cases, Susan B. Anthony in 1873. And the Supreme Court, the federal district court that heard her case, she was found guilty of violating New York state law, therefore violating federal election law when she voted for federal office, and because she was a woman. Now, she would go on to create the massive movement we know as women's suffrage. But prior to that, in her personal case, she argued that the 14th and 15th Amendment provided her the means to vote, and the federal court stated the obvious. No, you have privileges and immunities that are secured by the 14th Amendment in securing certain limited rights to your status as a U.S. citizen, but your rights to vote emanate from your status as a state citizen.
And so
this is key to the story.
So what were you guys hoping to accomplish on the 21st of December?
Well, on the 21st, what had happened is that I had already gone through the process of bringing this to the governor's attention with his acknowledgement and refusal to address the voter fraud that had gone on prior to these additional changes that I brought to your attention, which is the fact that there's no right to vote.
Yeah, and they don't want to discuss that kind of stuff. No.
So he kicked the can down the road. So the next thing I did is I went to the legislature and I filed a remonstrance. That's a big fancy word for a protest. It's a written protest.
Yeah.
It's very old in nature. Most people don't know what the word means, and neither did the legislature. And they denied me my First Amendment right for redress of grievance under the federal constitution incorporated in the state under Articles 31 and 32. And then they also denied me my due process. So when I filed it with the clerk of the House and the clerk of the Senate, the speaker doesn't get to unilaterally decide that I can't have my day to be heard.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so the president of the Senate did the same thing. And what did they do? By doing so, those are state felonies. And they went so far as to also further deprive New Hampshire's legislature is very large. It's 400 members. So Steve Shurtleff denied 399 members of the state legislature evidence that our voting laws were illegal.
Yeah.
And then the Senate did the same thing. She deprived of her fellow state senators, the 23 other members, knowledge that what they were doing was illegal and therefore continued the voting fraud. So fast forward to July of this year, more of the same, right? The governor declares an unconstitutional act. He has no power to declare a state of emergency. That power belongs with the legislature. We have separation of powers for a reason. The executive can only do those things which the legislative body is granted, because the founding fathers did not give any branch of government the authority to give away its power to another branch. It's called non-delegation doctrine. It's a very important part of American jurisprudence. And so that's what they did. So basically we get to this point where they expanded, while meeting illegally and meeting remotely, meeting in secret by Zoom and so on. What do? They pass House Bill 1266, which further amends the voting laws with the excuse of COVID. Our voting, our absentee voting is very strict. It can only be done if you are already registered to vote and you know you won't be in town for the election, or two, that you're already registered to vote and you have a physical disability and can't appear in person. That normally leads to a 4% turnout.
Yeah, that's what I used to do in California, and you had to prove that you needed to vote that way. Yeah.
Right. So That change this summer in House Bill 1265, presented by a Democratic legislature to a Republican governor, passed. Again, it's a crime. They amended the voting provisions so that that happened. And when you look at the details, the vote was turned from a normal 4% turnout to 29.6 in the primary and 30.4 in the general election.
Yeah.
Which included provisions of a lot. Listen, the attorney general gave the out-of-state college kids. He said, hey, if you've been locked at home because of COVID, you can go ahead and mail in your registration and your absentee vote.
Yeah.
You can't. And we went, that's a huge number, 30%. Why did we go a Republican governor, a Republican executive council, and all the state houses were all flipped, except at the federal level, we sent our two congressmen, two senators, and the Electoral College to Joe Biden. They were all blue.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. There's no way the people of New Hampshire voted resoundingly for the Republican Party and chose Democrats to go to the federal office. It's just not possible.
And that's what you were wanting to bring up on the 21st?
It's the cumulative damage.
Yeah.
Because I'm coming at this from the perspective we have a rule of law called the state constitution. It's a social compact. If one party refuses to live under those rules and conditions, we the people no longer have any obligation to follow them or listen to anything they say or do. We have the right under right of revolution to restore the old or establish a new government if those who've been elected refuse to give the people redress of grievance. And that's what we did on the 21st. I took a little bit of the lead of the original Declaration of Independence, which is the same thing. It's a divorce letter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I give the introduction and then I listed the grievances as to why we want to dissolve this union and restore our state. And that's what we're seeking here. We're seeking to restore a constitutional rule of law. But our public officials refuse to live under the constitutional rule of law. They operate as a federal franchise.
Yeah. So what's the next step?
Well, the next step will be the protest on the 7th for the inauguration. The governor claims that he wants to go ahead and violate the rights of the people and ignore. Look, we either have a state constitution and the Bill of Rights or we don't. And I say that we do because it's part of the historical record. It's where they derive their authority. And the right of revolution is one of those rights. So he's going to ignore us like he wants to do. He's going to meet illegally. He's going to violate the attorney general's given him permission to violate the constitution. He has to be sworn in front of the legislative body.
Yeah,
that's
they're changing 424 all the rules.
People. Right. And there's no end in sight. That's the point.
Yeah.
Our government
yeah.
is broken. It's closed for business. There's no reason. There's and look,
yeah,
let me
pretty soon it'll be a year like this, huh?
Yeah, and let me I think we're running out of our time limit. So here, let me read you the right of revolution written in 1784, or it was 1783, but it went into effect June 2nd, 1784. Right of revolution, quote. Government being instituted for the common benefit, protection, security of the whole community, and not for the private interest or emolument of any one man, family, or class of men. Therefore, whenever the ends of government are perverted and public liberty manifestly endangered, and all other means of redress are ineffectual. That's key. This can mm-hmm. only be done when all, and that's what the governor has done by his own ignorance. He's made himself irrelevant. And so he goes on to say, when all other means of redress are ineffectual, the people may and of right ought to reform the old, establish a new government. That word ought is a duty. That's a strong word. Ought, not maybe, not if you feel like it, but it's your duty. And then it goes on to say the doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive of the good and happiness of mankind. So that's what mm-hmm. we did. We invoked that right. And look, once this at some point in time will end up in a court of law. Can't tell you when, where, or how, but it will get there. And what's the defense of the status quo? Your Honor, they don't have any rights. We can continue to run this state any way we want to. because they don't have any rights.
Yeah.
And we can force them to live under our rule, right?
That's where we're at here. That's what's happening right now. So what is the best? So you guys are meeting. You're going to be at the State House on the 7th of January, right?
Yes, we have a whole group or multiple groups of patriots who are all frustrated with this lockdown that's now headed for a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's getting very close. This has been going on. It was invoked, Vicky, the shelter in place order, and the first interference with private persons and business happened on March 13th. So we're getting close to a year in lockdown. So whether your grievance is about the mask, whether your grievance is about the vaccine, whether your grievance is about the damage to your business, and there's a whole host of damage that's been done by this corrupt tyrant named Chris Sununu.
Yeah, by people that make money and sit at home and refuse to interact with any of us.
Right, exactly.
Where's a good place for people to find info online, or what's the best place?
Yeah, we have established a website for information and education purposes called cosnh.com, Committee of Safety NH, New Hampshire.com. I'll repeat it, cosnh.com. And within there is promotion of the threefold element. One is education. Two is to promote people in all the five counties, so that we can start spreading the word to hold a new election. And that's what a committee of safety is, by the way. It's what the founding fathers did. All the founding fathers during the revolutionary period, once they fired their colonial governments, they all elected a committee of safety. So we use the name and the concept because it had been used once before. What's the best way to know what to do is to follow what's been done before.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's named the Committee of Safety.
Cool. All right. The reason I had you on is in our NH Exit group on Facebook, Eric was posting your guys' info, and some people were saying, oh man, if I would have known it was happening, I would have been there. So hopefully we'll get out the word to even my small audience. We'll add some more people.
Awesome. So we're going to do the same thing. We're going to make a new signature page. I'm recommending to all the groups assembling that we go ahead and repeat the process. In other words, read aloud the Declaration of Article 10 and then present. Listen, if there's 500 people, we had 70 signatures on a Monday morning. The Declaration of Independence only had 56.
It was cold.
right. And it was, here it is in the middle of winter. So, or the first day of winter, the winter solstice. I'm told the planets were aligned.
All right. Well, I'm glad I had you on. And then maybe we can get an update, in a couple weeks or something like that.
That'd be fantastic, sir. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now.